Hi, folks. This is Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of today's Survival Show. This is episode number 175, where it's my goal to help you do what you can with what you have wherever you are. This is a practical show. I don't go tinfoil hat on you. I'm not into all these conspiracy theories and far out type thinking. I just keep this rooted in common sense because I am an everyday guy. This show is going to be about knife making, and I'm really excited about this. I think you're going to really enjoy it. I recently attended the American Bladesmith Society seminar and trade show. It was held in downtown San Antonio, here where I live. For those of you who are relatively new listening to the show, I live in the Alamo City, San Antonio. Spent quite a few years in Dallas-Fort Worth before that, originally from Wisconsin is where I call my home. That's where I did most of my growing up. So my good friend Matt Chusnick, who I know listens to this show, he called me up and he asked me if I was interested in attending. Well, little did I know that Bladesmith from our forum was a person that was going to be teaching a seminar and have a knife exhibit. So I definitely went, and it was a great time. The American Bladesmith Society, there are several links in this podcast that are mentioned, and I really believe that you should check those links out. One of them is AmericanBladesmith.com. That's the official site for the American Bladesmith Society. Another one you might want to check out is Fritz Knives, F-R-I-T-Z, Knives. That's Eric Fritz's website. He is Bladesmith on today's Survival Show forum. Another one you might want to check out is Taylor Knives. Taylor Knives, that's Shane Taylor. You're going to hear both Eric and Shane, and you're also going to hear Wade Coulter. Wade doesn't have a website, but these three guys I got together for a quick interview, and we did a great interview at the American Bladesmith Society. You can see all of the knives that they typically sell at bladegallery.com as well. Folks, I got to tell you, I never knew that there was so much involved in making custom knives. And I really learned a tremendous amount. I didn't know what a Damascus steel knife was, for example. And you know, a knife is one of our most important survival tools. You'll hear us talk about this in the interview. I don't know what you own for a knife, but there's really something to be said about a custom-made knife. There were some beautiful knives. Some of these things are pieces of art. And I also never knew what a master bladesmith was. Now I know. And you're going to hear about that in the interview coming up shortly. So Wade Coulter and Shane Taylor are master bladesmiths. Eric is a journeyman bladesmith, and he's going to be testing for his master bladesmith certification coming up shortly. Just a terrific interview that we had. As you think about your survival tools, think about what kind of knives you have. I mean, I thought I was doing well with a folder, with a Benchmade Griptilian folder and a big K-bar knife. I think I've got like an 8-inch blade on my big K-bar BK2. But I tell you what, these knives pale in comparison. I mean, these knives that I own are pretty good off-the-shelf knives. But, man, an off-the-shelf mass-production knife doesn't even come close to a custom-made knife like these guys make. I was also impressed by the prices. They weren't too bad. I mean, Eric Fritz had some of his everyday carry knives there for around $150 or so. And they were some pretty good fixed blade knives. I mentioned to him that I thought he should try making some folders, some folding knives, and I think he's going to consider that. The last thing I want to say before I put this interview on, I know there's some of you that listen to my show on firearms called the Handgun World Show. This interview is airing on both. It's airing on the Handgun World Show, and it's airing right here on today's Survival Show. So the reason I did that is because I've got different groups of listeners. Some of you listen to both of my podcasts. Some of you don't. So I want everybody to hear this because it's a terrific interview. A lot of gun enthusiasts also carry knives, and they like custom-made knives, and they like good quality knives. So again, that's why it's airing on both shows. And I do have a surprise coming up. If you've been following the forum Eric is making a knife for me, and I'm strongly considering using that custom-made knife as a fundraiser. I haven't decided that yet, but I'm strongly considering it. So for those of you who like to support my show and support the Survival Champions Club podcast, which supports some of the efforts that I do here, you may get a chance to win a custom knife. Couple of announcements real quick. Please remember to join our forum, today's Survival Show Forum. It's a good group, a small group, a close-knit group, but we love to have new people come in. If you do me a favor, if you join the forum, please send me an email. My email is bob@handgunworld.com. That's my other email. bob@todayssurvival.com. bob@todayssurvival.com. If you want to join the forum, go to todayssurvival.com. There's a forum button up at the top. Click that. It'll take you where you need to go. Again, please send me an email, bob@todayssurvival.com, if you join the forum. The reason is, this is how I keep spammers out. And it's about the best way I can think of. I'll approve your account usually within 24 hours or less, and you can start posting on the forum. Also, consider an investment in my Survival Champions Club. I've got a new one coming out. You can get one of the previous two versions, or you can pre-order the new version coming out. This is a way for you to support my show. I don't have any sponsors on this show. And the reason I don't have any sponsors, I want this to be commercial free for you. So this is a listener supported show. It's only $15. It's unique information that I've never covered on any of my shows before. You'll see where it says Survival Champions Club at todayssurvival.com. You can see how to invest. Click the buy now button. And that's it. That's all I'm going to say about that. Let's see. The other thing that I want to talk about real quick. Remember that links for everything I cover, I'm now posting on the forum. You don't have to be a member of the forum to look at the links, but I'd like you to join. But if you go to the Today's Survival Show forum and you'll look where it says comments about the podcasts, you'll see a thread that I generally start for every show, and that's where I put the links and give everybody who deserves exposure and deserves credit for this material the proper credit that they deserve. All right, without any further ado, let's go ahead and get right straight into the interview with these three custom knife makers at the American Bladesmith Society Convention just a little over about a week and a half ago. Stay tuned. Here you go. Okay, I am at the American Bladesmith Society knife making seminar and show. This is really cool. It's an experience I've never had a chance to experience before, but I'm joined by Eric Fritz, Shane Taylor, and Wade Coulter. Now, I've got with me here some master bladesmiths, and this is going to be some fun stuff.
I'm a journeyman bladesmith.
And Eric is a journeyman bladesmith. Eric is bladesmith on our forum. And Shane, you're a master bladesmith?
Yeah. Yep, I've been a master smith since 2000.
Master bladesmith since 2000.
Wade? I was a master bladesmith since 99. Last bladesmith of the old millennium.
Tell us real quick, what do you have to do to become a master bladesmith?
You have to do a lot. You have to build a knife that will pass a performance test that is witnessed by master smiths. And after you pass the performance test, then you build five knives that will be juried for fit and finish by a panel of master smiths and other experts. It's a very rigorous testing procedure. The ABS is really one of the only organizations that does things in the old world style of the journeyman, the master, the apprentice, that kind of an approach.
So you've been a master since 99?
Yeah.
And Shane, you've been one since 2000?
Yeah. Yep. And the performance test, kind of go through what you have to do. You have to do a performance test to become a journeyman smith as well. And the performance test is you have to make for journeyman smith, a 10-inch carbon steel blade that will cut a 1-inch free-hanging rope with one cut, chop through 2 2x4s, and still shave hair, and then bend to 90 degrees without breaking. Then then for master smith, you have to do the same test, only with a Damascus knife.
Wow.
The performance test has been described before, I think, really adequately as you have to be able to build a combat quality knife to pass the test. I like that analogy.
I like that too. So what is combat quality?
Something that your life can damn well depend on.
What would not be combat quality?
Something that would be made from Pakistan.
I'm glad you... Or China, right?
What they're trying to get through with the testing, I believe, is to prove that your knife can stand up to the rigors of daily use and will not fail under extreme circumstances.
And that's important because, I mean, you know, if you're, it's like a gun or anything else. If your life is depending on it, it's got to perform.
That's it.
That's it. There's nothing worse than a broke blade when you need it.
No kidding. Now, Eric, you're making a knife, and you've been putting a lot of cool pictures on the forum about that. Talk a little bit about it for people that haven't checked it out yet.
What I'm building is one of my most popular styles. I call it a forged shoot knife or a forged tactical knife. And it was forged out of a piece of 5160 steel, and it'll have a stainless steel guard, and then I hope the forum members will vote on what the handle material will be.
I'm gonna cast a vote tonight.
Okay.
I'll put it on there. And by the time people hear this, I'll already have started voting.
Okay, and what it is it's what I feel of the ultimate combat knife. To me, a combat knife is not necessarily a fighting knife. It's a knife you can use to prepare your supper, to open a crate with, if you need to build shelter. It's an all-around use knife. If you want a fighting knife, that's entirely different. And this is what I feel is the ultimate in a using blade.
Okay, so since I've got masters here, what's the difference between a combat knife and a utility knife?
Very little.
Because I've heard those thrown around.
The names that people toss on knives are... It's kind of like... I have one knife. It's a smaller automatic knife. I say if a man comes up and looks at it, I call it a vest knife. If a woman comes and looks at it, I call it a purse knife. So it's kind of... When you get into utility and tactical, when you look at the definition of tactical, I think it's something like basic use... Basic yeah. use, all around. When you look at something like a utility knife, the name's a perfect description. But you could also call it a short bladed gravity knife, or I mean, mm-hmm. names are names, and
it
they
depends
don't,
on.
I kind of figured you were going to say that.
It depends on what your use is going to be, on what the utility is. Is my view on it. It could be anything from a 3-inch fixed blade to a 10.5-inch buoy, depending on the utility of necessity at the time.
Good point.
I go about heat treating a knife completely different, like for a hunting knife.
Yeah, I want to hear about that.
Than I would for, say, a fighting knife. A fighting knife, I'm going to make way more flexible, and it's not going to be quite as hard as I would for a hunting knife. So it's still going to have edge holding ability, but not as much.
Why more flexible
on a fighting knife? Because the worst thing that could happen to a fighting knife is for it to break.
Break off, right.
Yeah.
So what, now, okay, so when you make a knife more flexible, how do you do that?
That's in the heat treating process. First you harden the blade, which you take it up to a critical temperature. And it depends on what steel you're using, where the critical temperature is, usually around 1,500 degrees.
What steel do you like for a fighting knife?
Well, I mainly use Damascus in all my stuff, so I use 15N20 and 1084, but I'll have up to 5 different steels in my Damascus. And I also use a W2 steel as well, and that's a water-quenched steel. And it's more for Japanese style looking blades.
What about you, Wade?
I build impractical, bizarre. On the other hand, I do have a side of me that says, and I've tried to always teach this to any of the students. When you build something, when you have a customer that's got more money than brains, and they want to take out a knife that they just spent a couple of thousand bucks on and chop down a 4-inch tree, it better be able to do it. So if you look at it,
otherwise you're going to hear about it.
That's right. Well, this the expectations. I mean, they need to live up to people's expectations, whatever the expectations are. And I do build performance-oriented stuff. It's not very common. It's not very often. And I depend on a lot of other people's testing and their experience. I have testing of my own, but I do trust. There are people that I trust, and I like what they say. I'll try to incorporate it.
Wade, do you have a website where you're selling some of your stuff?
I don't.
If somebody wants to take a look at what you're making, how can they do that?
I'm one of those dinosaurs that is slow moving into this. But I do have some representation. There are a number of purveyors that I've worked with in the past. They're, you know, a presence on the web, and they represent me very well. One of them would be Daniel O'Malley at a Blade Gallery.
Is that his website, Blade Gallery?
Bladegallery.com.
Bladegallery.com.
And okay. Even though I don't know if I have anything I don't know if I have anything for sale on his site right now, but everything that I've in the past worked with him on, he puts it's still on his site, and a person can, you might not be able to buy it, but you can at least see what the hell I have.
Yeah, well, that's good. Eric, what's your site?
FritzKnives.com.
That's FRITZ.
Yes, sir.
FritzKnives.com.
As well as BladeGallery.com.
Okay.
And TaxStrike.com is a new purveyor I've started using. They sell action targets, and they also have another website called Shooters Consignment, where you can sell used firearms-related items. And
Tax site?
Tax Strike.
Tax Strike. T-A-C?
Yes, sir.
Strike.com?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And that's basically where mine are sold.
Okay.
TaylorKnives.com.
Okay. TaylorKnives.com.
Yeah. And BladeGallery.com.
And Blade Gallery. So Blade Gallery is popular.
Yes.
With our specific group, Daniel only deals in certain knife makers' knives. And so he's kind of picked up on the Northwest knife makers and the Montana guys in particular, it seems. He has good results marketing our wares.
Eric, you were telling me you got started making just some basic stuff, right?
Yeah, when I first started making knives, I grew up on a cattle ranch in Southwest North Dakota, and I needed a good knife. And so I'd played around with it for several years, and then I met up with Wade and Shane, and they've refined my techniques, I guess would be the best way to say it.
You've refined your techniques.
They've helped you refine your techniques, right?
Yes, and then I spent some time in the military. I was an intelligence analyst, and during Desert Storm, I had a Gerber knife that failed on me. And that kind of piqued my interest.
Imagine that.
Yeah. That piqued my interest as to what I thought a good utility or combat utility knife should be.
Okay, what happened to that Gerber knife?
I was actually digging a rock out because I didn't have an e-tool with me, and the blade broke. And that's when I learned the difference between differential heat treat and full hardened. And
that's what you were talking about, right, Jane?
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, there's several ways you can heat treat a blade and make it strong. Where he was just talking about a differential heat treat is where you actually leave the edge very hard, but it progressively gets softer as it goes towards the spine of the blade.
Because that's where it's more likely to break,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, what you got to think of is when something's hard, it's also brittle. So you're always looking for that compromise between hardness and flexibility.
Okay.
And there's something to be said also for another factor in heat treat, and that is toughness. The type of steel can deliver you. You got the compromise between brittle and soft, and you've also got toughness. And then another one to throw in there is wearability. You know, will an edge wear down?
The abrasion resistance.
You might have a very sharp edge, but it'll wear at a very high rate. So there's all kinds of little things to juggle in there. But when you approach a knife on an individual basis like we do, you can put that into each one. Whereas mass production, it's a wonderful thing. It gives you a uniform product, but you have a lot of compromising.
A lot of compromise.
One of the things with the ABS and the knives you'll see here is we build what I would call an heirloom quality blade, where it's a knife you can use, but your son and grandson will use in future generations.
It'll last that long.
We're talking about knives that cost more than your typical hardware store fare, but it will also last longer. It's something that you can take pride and ownership, like our grandfathers did. Years ago, you could look forward to inheriting your mother's china. Well, in today's society, with credit card debt and everything else, you're going to inherit your mother's paper plates. Whereas with a quality knife...
That's a good analogy.
You can pick something
you
up...
You can afford paper?
You can pick something up that you can pass on to your kids and know it'll work.
Well, and you can use it, and then when you're done, you know, when you don't need it, or you're not using it anymore, you pass it on to your kids and your grandkids.
Years ago, you know, our grandfathers would buy a knife or a tool, and they didn't care what it cost. You know, everybody talks about losing a knife. Well, the deal was they knew they weren't going to lose it because it was a tool.
It's valued and it's treasured.
Yeah. Whereas today, you can find a knife for $2.99 at a gas station, and you lose it all well.
The kind of knives you build are the kind of knives they put in their will as an asset.
At
to
times,
make sure that their kids and grandkids.
I have knives in the hands of special forces operators in Afghanistan and Iraq right now. I have law enforcement carrying my knives.
Really?
I know there's law enforcement in Rosebud County carries Wade's knives. Shane's.
Well, I got law enforcement in Texas carrying my knives.
Shane's actually.
Wade, where are you from?
Montana.
You're from Montana. Eric, you're in Montana.
Montana.
Shane, you're in Montana.
Yeah,
Montana is the gold spot of knives, huh?
I don't know if I would call it that, but it's the gold spot, period.
It's the gold spot standard. I know.
Actually, per capita, we have more mastersmiths in Montana than anywhere else.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think there's seven mastersmiths in Montana.
And I got two of them right here.
Yeah. But there's only, 130-some mastersmiths?
Right about 120. Right about 100
in the U.S.
Yeah,
in the world.
In the world.
It's a worldwide organization. We have master smiths in Taiwan. We've got them in
France, Australia.
Yeah.
Wow.
Eric's eligible for his master smith.
I just need to take my test and pass.
Which explain that again.
Okay, for the master bladesmith test, I will have to build a Damascus blade of at least 425 layers. 325 layers. And forge it out, heat treat it, and then cut the rope with one cut. Cut a 2x4.5 twice, and then demonstrate that the blade will shave hair. And then to demonstrate the differential heat treat, we'll clamp it in a vise under the supervision of a master smith, bend it to 90 degrees, and then release it without the blade cracking. And the ultimate.
I'd love to see that test, man.
I actually have pictures of it.
It would be a wonderful test to do, like at the and it's been done at a number of knife shows, where people will test and allow the public to come and watch.
Really,
it's pretty exciting.
That's not going to happen here, though, is it?
I don't believe there's anybody testing.
It's like watching golf. Absolute silence followed by complete. Applause and hilarity.
Well, I would sit there if I could watch that test. I mean, that would really be cool. I'd love to see
Wade
that.
Wade actually did his mastersmith test in public, which convinced me to do my journeyman in public. And I tested under these two guys when they called and told me it was time to perform my test. There's 150 people watching. I turned, vomited, went up, and performed my test.
You were that nervous?
Oh, yeah. Because if you fail, you're done. You have to wait 6 months to test again.
Oh, really?
So it's all or nothing at that point.
Did you pass it the first time?
Yes.
Did you pass it the first time?
Yeah.
So I can see why you're nervous about
that's
that.
That's a simple question, though. Did I pass it the first time? Yes. That doesn't mean that until you pass it, no matter how perfect you think everything is, until you pass, you don't pass.
How many times, if you don't mind admitting, how many times did your knives fail before you took the test? I'm sure you practiced that, didn't you?
I didn't. I approached it with the option, with the attitude that failure was not something that was allowable. Frankly, when I talk to people about taking the test now, I say, you just... Remove every possibility for failure. Don't worry about how you make it. Just remove every possibility for failure and then take the test. And even when you do it that way, until they say you passed, you sweat bullets. Submitting yourself to the scrutiny of other people that do the same thing that you do is not a commonly accepted business practice.
Yeah, no kidding.
Actually, probably the most nervous I've ever been in my entire life was when I was standing outside the room having my five knives judged for Master Smith.
When my children were born, it wasn't as stressful.
Well, all right, so since I got the Masters here, give me your opinion on something. All right, say somebody's listening to this. Maybe they don't have a couple thousand to spend, but they got a reasonable amount of money to spend on a decent knife. Tell them what they should look for.
You know, my views on it, number one is, does the individual, if you're buying a custom knife, I'm assuming we're talking
about.
Yeah,
custom knife, yeah.
Does the knife maker know the heat treat? Can he explain what's been done to it?
How do you know he knows? What should you look for?
Take his word for it. It's about all you can do.
Okay.
Ask him some questions. You know, what's the Rockwell hardness? Does he test his blades? How many cuts on hemp rope will that blade do before it goes dull? Does he cut wood with it? How many cuts on pine 2x4s before it goes dull? And find out if he has done any in-house testing. One thing I always keep in mind when I sell a knife is in the Japanese society in the era of the shogun, if a blade failed in combat, it was the warrior's duty to insert what was left of the blade into the knife maker that made it. So I look at it that way.
So people were standing in line to become knife makers in that society.
Yeah, right, sure, yeah.
Well, I look at it, no kidding. Shane just made a knife that went to a SEAL Team 6 operative.
Really?
Now he's got to sleep at night knowing that that operative's life may depend on that knife.
So someone on SEAL Team 6 using one of your knives?
I have it at this show. I'm going to give it to the person that's going to take it to SEAL Team 6. Oh, I believe it's SEAL Team. I'm not sure if it's SEAL Team.
Well,
six.
It doesn't matter which SEAL Team it is. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
That's one of our...
Is it going to be at the show today?
Yeah, I have it up at my table.
I got to see that.
One of our friends actually retired off of SEAL Team, and he is also a knife maker, so we've gotten input through the years on what an operator looks for. So that's...
What do they look for?
Well, I'd tell you, but I'd have to kill you.
Yeah. it's with your knife, right?
It's usually quite a bit different. What they look for is usually quite a bit different than what the glamorization of combat usually... No, they look for something that's going to hold up and it's going to deliver what they expect of it.
Well, I think that's a fantastic use of our tax dollars is to give these SEAL operators your knives. I mean,
these
seriously.
Are donations on our part. We are receiving any money.
You're
for
not receiving. Oh,
this
I didn't know that.
A friend of ours set this program up where, as custom knife makers, we can make a knife and donate it to an operator that will use it.
Wow!
Because
I thought they were buying it.
No, these guys, special forces operators, don't make a lot of money. They're enlisted military and. When I was enlisted in the military, I know I couldn't afford...
No, I thought maybe you were selling them to the government who was giving them to SEAL Team 6.
No, these are all donations.
No? God bless you. That's awesome. I mean, that's...
It's really a long tradition in history of knife making, especially in the United States. When there's a conflict, when there's something comes up, the people that make knives do this. And support and do what they can for the cause. It's been going on since the Civil War, since the Revolutionary War. You find a lot of knives that were made in the Civil War that were handmade, homemade, not manufactured factory knives, but in World War I, in World War II, the same thing. There's a lot of knives that are coming back on the secondary marketplace and collectors today that were made by knife makers back then and donated to the troops.
Well, and I would have to say it's a big feather in your hat to be able to say you made a knife for the SEAL Team operators, isn't it?
It makes you feel a little bit better about yourself, too, when they're out
exactly.
there doing it and you're back home.
Realistically, I spent my time in the military. I'm fat and out of shape now. There's younger guys out there doing it, so I don't have to.
And that's your way to give back.
Thank God every day that there's young men willing to step up and do that.
So do I. Young men and women both that are stepping up doing it. Wow. So, all right. So you guys are here at the American Bladesmith Society convention here in San Antonio to show off your stuff, or are you learning something too?
Both.
Both.
There's some really good seminars that
What does a master knifesmith learn at something like this? Master bladesmith learn at something like this?
Keep your eyes open and your mouth shut as much as possible and learn about human nature, learn about business, learn about all aspects of doing it. It's a matter of, again, standing kneecap to kneecap with somebody and conveying the information, the personal experience. It's just great to go to a show. The internet is a wonderful thing. It's opened up so many things to so many people, but there's still, you cannot beat going to a show and meeting the people. And, well, think about it. They're all folks just like you. They like knives.
Yep.
And they like guns.
Something that's very unique with knife making is there's very few secrets amongst us. Just about everybody will share what they know with everybody else. So there's always little tips that you can pick up from other knife makers that make things go a little bit faster for you or make you do something a little bit better.
Cool.
I'm with Wade. The fact that I can meet Bob face to face and he's buying a knife from me, now I know who is using my tools.
Yeah.
And when we get down to it, that's all a knife is. It's a tool. It's just like any other tool in the toolbox.
It's like a gun. A gun's a tool.
That is correct.
It's just another tool you have.
I heard it said, and this is about motorcycles, but I think it really applies to knife and other things too, but a guy said he had a classic old motorcycle, very rare, and he offered this other fellow a chance to ride it. And the guy said, I couldn't do that. That thing's too rare. And the guy looked at him and said, it's just a motorcycle, unless you don't ride it, and then it isn't even that. And I think that applies very well to knives.
Then it's just something to look at.
And it's not even that.
Yeah. Well, you know, and there's a lot of people that listen to this because they're into survival knives. You know, they're into something, in case the crap hits the fan, they want something that's going to perform. And perform now and not fail and not be like a Gerber that failed on you, Eric, right?
And not to badmouth Gerber, just I
know you're
that
not bad
knife through an extreme situation that I felt it should have held up to. I know the knives I make will hold up to the rigors that I would put them through. And I know I can depend on that to get my butt home at night.
Frankly, to stand up to the abuses that we put them through. I had something fail on me. I worked in a power plant for 10 years. This is a good testing platform for blades right
there. I bet
there.
It is. What happened?
Well, again, it was this particular instance, it was a multi-tool that I had turned sideways and I was using for a bung wrench. So I was absolutely abusing the thing. But it broke. Well, it wasn't a life and death situation, but it still broke and it left me hanging. I was abusing it, sure, but I think the measure of our tools is how much abuse they can stand up to, not so much use.
Yeah, I agree.
Because as humans, we will abuse what we have.
Especially if it's an emergency type situation.
Absolutely.
That's when things get abused all the time. People are in desperate situation, and sometimes they will ask a knife or a gun or anything to do something it's not designed to do.
When you need to dig a hole and you got a choice between a knife and a shovel, you're going to pick the shovel. But when you got to dig a hole and all you got is a knife, you'll still dig a hole.
You're still going to dig a hole, but you're going to be digging it with your knife. That's a good point. You know. So you guys, so you're here to keep your eyes open, to look around. There's a show. There's a show starting in 45 minutes. So what are you going to be showing off at the show?
I brought the knives I brought some of my lower-end everyday carry knives, EDC knives.
I got to see those.
As well as a couple of my Forge Tacticals and then some higher-end Bowie knives. That's what I've brought along. But I'm here to learn. I can go talk to Wade Coulter, Shane Taylor, or the other mastersmiths. If there's a technique they're doing that I want to know about, with this organization, it's all about education. And so they will bring me up to their level rather than beat me down and hide secrets.
When are you going to take your master test?
Hopefully in June.
You got to keep us posted on that.
I will.
You got to keep us posted. We need to have some kind of an internet celebration when you when you become a master bladesman.
We will do it.
All right, so before we go ahead.
In internet celebration, do you have internet hangovers?
We could try to figure that out. Let's see. I think I've had an internet hangover before. So, all right, before we close, before we stop it, let's do this again. Let's talk about the websites.
TaylorKnives.com.
TaylorKnives.com.
And bladegallery.com.
And bladegallery.com. Eric?
Fritzknives.com, bladegallery.com, tackstrike.com.
Okay.
And another good one is the AmericanBladesmith.com. If anybody's interested in this organization, it has a list of all the journeymen and all the master bladesmiths in the organization.
And that's, I'm glad you talked about it. And I'll put links to all this so okay. people can, if they're driving when they listen Excellent. To this or they're yeah. working out or whatever. Wade, Blade Gallery again?
Blade Gallery. There's several other purveyors, but it's escaping right now. I think Blade Gallery's best representation. If I don't have anything for sale and I obviously don't have anything myself on the internet, it's something that a person can go to see what my work has been.
We got to teach you how to get your stuff on the internet, buddy.
I don't know.
Come on, man. That's the way to get exposed to the world.
I like standing in front of people.
I know. I'm in face to face sales, and I don't sell yeah. anything on the internet. Except myself, but you know the products I sell, I don't sell on the internet.
I love knowing who my customers are. I love to meet them.
And I'd like to thank you, Bob, for the opportunity to get our information out there. I've enjoyed your podcasts for I don't know how long now.
Thanks.
And it means a lot that you're willing to take the time to get us exposure in our products.
Well, that's what it's all about. I believe in what you guys do, and even just the short time I've been here, it's amazing what I'm seeing out there.
It's exciting, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I didn't know. I mean, this is the first time I've been to something like this. I didn't know it existed.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard of a master bladesmith, but I didn't really know what a master bladesmith was.
Yeah, that's a normal reaction that we have people first time to one of our shows. They'll say, we had no idea this stuff existed. At this quality.
I didn't, so. Yeah.
Master is a, just real quick going back on that, master is a thing that's so easily tossed around anymore. This is an organization where I would say that if you actually get to print master on your business card, it isn't just because some bunch of friends of yours or yourself decided, well, I've been doing this for a long time, I'm a master bladesmith.
No.
This is tested. It's legitimate.
And I didn't realize it was such a rigorous test.
It's the only legitimate game in town.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't realize it was such a rigorous test. That's why I asked you guys, what do you have to do to pass the test to be a master bladesmith? Wow.
Well, I don't consider it to be anything on par with the military service. But if you look at it, if somebody else is a master smith in the ABS and I don't know them personally, I still have a connection with them. If it's a guy I don't even like, I have a connection with him because we've chewed the same dirt. We've had to do the same thing. I know what he did to become a master smith. I know what I did.
Even if you don't like him, you respect him.
Absolutely.
Because you know what he had to go through.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's cool. Guys, thanks. Wade, appreciate it. Eric, thank you very much.
Bob.
Thanks, Shane.
Nice
I appreciate
meeting.
It. Nice meeting you guys, and thanks for your time, man. I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, just a couple things I want to say in wrapping up. Wasn't that a terrific interview? I tell you, folks, if you're considering a knife, a good quality survival knife, I tell you what, you just simply can't go wrong with some of the products that these guys make. And like they mentioned in the interview, it's not just a survival knife or it's not just a utility knife, but it's a family heirloom. It's a work of art. It's something you can pass down to your kids and your grandkids. And, you know, I really enjoyed being there, and I hope that you gained something from this interview. I hope you were able to kind of enjoy some of the experience at the show like I did. And you know, by listening to these three guys, it kind of brought a whole new light to the subject of knives for me. I mean, I hope it did for you. So that's pretty much it. If you like what you heard, I'd certainly love to get an iTunes review from you. Some of you who listen to this show on iTunes, go to today's Survival Show subscription page and give me a rating. Give me a review, good, bad, or indifferent. I'd love to hear what you have to say. I'm an open-minded guy, folks. So you know what? I just try to make this show better, you know, and improve on it. So I'd love to get your feedback and let me know what you think. I try to keep things practical, rooted in common sense, and talk about things that you can actually use. Again, love to hear your comments. Audio feedback, by the way, is something else I'd love to get. As you know, recently I've had some guest podcasters submit some information to me. So if you want to put together a podcast, if you want to record something, there's all kinds of ways you can do that. You can use Audacity. You can use a digital recorder. Audacity is a great free software You can record right from your computer. You can send it to me. You don't have to send it to me in an MP3 format if you want. You can send it to me any way you want, and I can convert it. Any audio format is fine. There's all kinds of file sending services that you can send large files as well. You can email them to me. YouSendIt.com is a good one. DropSend is another good one. Dropbox is another good one. Try all these out. YouSendIt.com, DropSend.com, Dropbox.com. Those are all excellent ways to send me files. So if you got some audio comments and things, or if you have a seminar, if you have a subject that you'd like to talk about and be a guest podcaster on today's Survival Show, I would love to hear it. So with that said, thanks for listening to episode 175. Can't believe it's been that many episodes. I appreciate you guys sticking in with me. The listener count continues to grow. Thank you very much. It's been my goal here at today's Survival Show to help you do what you can with what you have, wherever you are. And that might just include something about a knife now that you've listened to this. Thanks again for downloading, folks. I'll catch you next week. Goodbye.